The Aaron Brooks Show.
Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening and listening to Aaron Brooks Show. We've got something new going on, but I'm going to wait just 1 minute until I get the video streaming going. So it's just going to take less than 60 seconds, and then we'll reintroduce the show at that point. So just hold, hang in there with me. Hopefully this will work. Come on, Facebook Live. I copy pasted something wrong today, so it didn't work right. Hopefully we'll get it fixed right now. Chat goes there. Let's get shut down. Go live. Okay. I think we're good. Okay, welcome everybody. This is Aaron Brooks. You're listening to Aaron Brooks Show. We're doing something new today and something that I plan to do on a regular basis, maybe every day during the week or when I'm home, or in other words, not traveling, or sometimes. We'll see how it evolves. But the basic idea here is to do something short, 20, 30 minutes max, that is really kind of a review of the news of the day from a Aaron Brooks perspective, from an objectivist perspective, kind of just looking at the headlines, giving you my impressions. To some extent, they will be first impressions because this is not something I'm going to really spend a lot of time preparing for and analyzing, but really what's going on in the world. Now, I hope that over time, as we build this up, this becomes your alternative to that evil mainstream media out there and even more evil alternative media that's out there. So the idea is for this to become your primary, at least your primary interpretive source for the news. I'll still be using, and I look at the news stories I'm using today, they're all from the mainstream media. I'll still be using mainstream media stories because they're the ones who have reporters and actually go out there and find stuff out. Some non-so mainstream media sources and then my interpretation. A lot of this will be off of the headlines, so it will be the main stories of the day, but not always. And let me just say, it's going to be stories I'm interested in. It's not going to be stories that are necessarily viewed by other people as the most important stories. For example, I have no interest in this Russia probe, Russia scandal, whatever you want to call it. I don't find any particular interesting things to say about it. I don't have any particular original anything to say about it. So I'm not going to talk about it unless something comes up that I think is meaningful and interesting and that other people are not saying about. There's a lot of stuff that if I think other people are basically covering it in a way that I think makes sense, I'm not going to comment on it. So I'm going to comment on things that I think objectivism or I have a unique perspective on, where I think that it can be interesting for people to see how I look at the news and how I analyze the news, and things that I think are going to be controversial, and we'll see where this takes us. Again, I'm going to try to do this often, frequently, make this a real place for you to come to. We'll see if you guys are interested in it. There's some danger of oversaturation where you guys just go, oh no, not more Aaron, and rip your hair out and run for the hills and stop listening or watching are watching me, but hopefully that won't happen. Hopefully it'll be interesting. I did net neutrality just a few days ago, so I'm not going to do net neutrality again. If you, by the way, just look at my past shows. I spent quite a lot of time on net neutrality a few days ago, so you can do that. You can call in, but again, I don't want this to be, you know, where we go on for on and on and on forever. I don't want this to be overly a Q&A show where you're calling in. I really want to try to be, you know, to focus on a few aspects of what's in the news cycle and to highlight things that maybe are not being highlighted and then talk about them. So a lot of me hopefully not too much. Now, as I mentioned before, feel free to call in, but I'm not guaranteeing I'll take all the questions, and I'm not guaranteeing I'll answer all the questions. I've got a few issues I want to cover. There are three stories in the news I want to cover quickly, and I'm going to cut it off because I want a short show. Again, if you're calling in and you want to ask a question, press 1 so I know you're asking a question. And since I haven't said anything yet, I'm not sure why you're calling in. Obviously, it's not about a topic I'm going to talk about because I haven't talked about anything, but that's fine. I'll get to you after I cover the topics, right? So we've got two callers on the line. All right, two things I want to talk about. First thing is this case in front of the Supreme Court that was argued today, the gay wedding cake or the not gay wedding cake or the wedding cake that gays wanted. I think it was it's an interesting case. It's a good case to talk about because everything I read about it is wrong. I think the Supreme Court, by definition, is going to rule wrongly on the case because there's no way for them to rule appropriately without completely overturning decades of legal precedent and law. So whatever they rule, it's going to be wrong. And I think it's interesting, and I also think it's interesting to see what other people have written about the case. So let's start with just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. Okay, so this guy Phillips is 61 years old. He's a devout Christian, and he's the proprietor of Masterpiece Cake Shop in Lakewood, Colorado, which is not far from Denver. He works as a cake, he describes, as a cake artist, all right? And, you know, he's a devout Christian. And Charlie Craig and David Mullins entered his shop to order a cake to celebrate their wedding. Obviously, two males, so this is a gay wedding. Phillips said that although he would gladly make cakes for gay people for birthdays or other celebrations, he disapproves of same-sex marriage on religious grounds and so does not make cakes for such celebrations. He also refuses for religious reasons to make Halloween cakes. But I guess there's nobody there to sue. If you don't want to make a Halloween cake, who's going to sue you? You know, I don't know. To be compelled to do so would, he says, violate his constitutional right to speak freely. This, he says, includes the right not to be compelled to contribute his expensive cake artistry to a ceremony or occasion celebrating ideas or practices he does not condone. All right. All right. So, the case, of course, the gay couple sued. They sued under the civil rights law, really under a Colorado civil rights equal access law, basically saying that proprietors of stores cannot discriminate based on race, sexual preference, and everything else, you know, basically on civil rights grounds based on you know, a long-running, since the 1960s, precedent that says that you as a property owner, when it comes to a store, the store is deemed in a sense public property. When it comes to your ability to discriminate who you serve, you have to serve all comers in a sense, or you cannot discriminate based on sex, sexual orientation, and a whole bunch of, I'm sure there's a long, long list of things on the basis of which you cannot discriminate. So you see that, so there seems to be two claims. One claim is, wait a minute, my right to free speech is being obstructed here. That's the cake artist. And art is considered speech, and therefore he's, or art is considered speech, I guess, the way speech is defined today. And therefore a cake artist is considered speaking when he is making a cake, and therefore he has a right to free speech. So we have the right to free speech versus the right to, you know, go anywhere one pleases. That is not to be discriminated against, right? Not to be discriminated against based on civil rights basis, right? So, you know, that's where we are. So it's interesting. So in the Supreme Court, when they met today to talk about this, there was a lot of discussion about, is a cake a piece of art? So, you know, they were asking, you know, a cake is dessert, or maybe it's breakfast, it's a muffin. You know, how do we treat this cake? You know, and if cake is art, making a cake is art, then what about a floral arrangements? And what about custom design arrangements? And what about, I don't know, the person who designs the invitation, or the person who puts together the menu for the dinner, what about the person who cooks the menu? If cake is art, cake making is art, what about meal making? Is that art? And what about the jeweler? And if all of those things are arts, then does that mean all of those people can discriminate based on speech, based on their right to free speech? And where does that end? And they asked about the hairstylist and the makeup artist, and the poor lawyer had to say that he thinks is art and that he doesn't think is art, and blah, blah, blah. You know, what an impossible situation. And then, of course, George Will steps in and he says, look, there's no way cake making is art. Cake making is cake making. It's just about a cake. And he says, you know, photography, now that's an art, right? It's inherently creative. It's an expressive art. So photographers have a strong case against being compelled to document ceremonies that goes against their beliefs, because it'll be a violation of their speech. But then he says, well, but less plausibly about a florist, even though that's aesthetic expression. So maybe floral arrangement is art. So maybe they should be allowed to discriminate. But then chauffeurs, he says, that's not First Amendment. They're just driving and you can't make the case that's art. And he says it's difficult to formulate a limiting principle that draws a bright line distinguishing easily, essentially, expressive conduct from conduct which incidental or negligible expressive possibilities. Okay, so there's so much going on here. There's so much confusion. There's so much wrong going on here that boggles the mind. He says a cake can be a medium for creativity. Hence, in some not too expansive sense, it can be food for thought. Wow. However, it certainly and primarily is food. And the creator's involvement with it ends when he sends it away to those who consume it. All right. So here we are. We're having to distinguish between actions that are speech and actions that are not speech. There's no principle. It's, I guess, how expressive the action is that will determine whether it's speech or not. And then there's the issue of, is the speech protected per se, or, as the argument goes in these kind of cases, and in this case in particular, is it an issue of religious liberty? That is, religious speech is a particular category, and it needs additional protection above and beyond. I mean, what would happen if it was a secular photographer and he said, I don't know, black weddings because or mixed marriages because I'm offended by mixed marriages, but I'm an atheist, so it has nothing to do with religion. George Will, who I generally like, would then he defend it? But notice that nobody can come up with a principle. Nobody can come up with a principle. They're trying to somehow wiggle themselves into some kind of argument that maybe makes sense here. But they can't. Because the only way to view this is to view this as an issue of rights, of an issue of the right to life, not as a particular, not of an issue of free speech, because I don't think this is an issue of free speech. This is an issue of a freedom, of issue of an individual's right to decide what is done on his property. It's an issue of the right to life. It's an issue of the right to property. You have a right to refuse service to anyone for any reason at any time. And once you ignore that right, once you shun that, once you indeed accept that that right does not exist, that the state has the power, that the state has the ability to regulate and control and tell you who you can serve, when you can serve them, then you've created a massive, massive mess. Right? A massive mess that you cannot really get out of. There's no way to get out of the mess because you've already rejected the fundamental right, which is the right to your own property and to do on your own property what you deem fit, unless you're violating contracts, unless you're violating somebody else's right. But nobody has a right to walk onto your property and demand service. It's interesting because one of these authors who's writing, I think this is in the Washington Post, recognizes that there's this confluence of rights and all these rights and everybody demanding a right, and they're all contradicting and all bumping into each other. There's the right to free speech, but then there's the right of gays to go and buy whatever they want, and they have a right to marry, and they have a right to express themselves, and they have a right to have a cake. And there are all these people who supposedly have so-called rights. And he says, you know, he says, rights talk is forcing a conflict between two fundamental values. Rights talk, as if rights are just the stuff we talk about, right? It's language devout from a principle that exists in reality, that is a reference in reality. Of course, sometimes values collide and society must choose. Society must choose because values are colliding. Right? How do you choose? How do you choose when values collide? How do you choose when values are collide? You choose based on rights. That's what rights are for. We have rights to protect ourselves, but we have rights to protect our freedoms. But we have rights, ultimately, when there's a conflict between me and you about values, where it's not clear who owns this property, or it's not clear what can or cannot be done on this particular property, we resolve that conflict of values based on rights, based on the principle of the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So what you have here is a law that was passed 50 years ago, right? It's almost as old as I am. It's 50-something years ago. Civil Rights Act, I think, is 64. So it's almost my age. And all the distortions and perversions and wiggling and confusion and unprincipled thinking that that bad law passing has created. Now, I'm a huge supporter of much of what's in the Civil Rights Law, which is the Civil Rights Bill, which dismantled the Jim Crow laws. I am hugely in favor of the complete dismantling of the Jim Crow laws, the declaration of racism as evil, and making clear that the government cannot discriminate based on race. But the idea that the government can impose itself on a shopkeeper, on a store, on an owner of a private business and tell them who they can and cannot serve is completely wrong. Not because of free speech, but because of right to life, a right to property. Maybe not a right defined clearly in the Bill of Rights, but this is exactly what James Madison warned us of. He said, just because we got a Bill of Rights doesn't mean those are the only rights you have. Doesn't mean those are the only rights. Now, maybe we have a legal expert that's coming in to come on and say, no, no, it is articulated in the Bill of Rights. You can refer it. I'm not a legal expert. But the fact is, right of association is one way you could think about this. You have a right to associate with whoever you want. The right to property is in there, but not clearly defined. But That's exactly what Madison warned us of. He said, no, you have many, many more rights than what articulated here. This is just a sample, an example, a basis on which to understand how to view rights. Rights as freedoms of action. The freedom to act, it's as Ayn Rand called it, it's a way to bring moral law into politics, to bring your right to pursue the rational values necessary for your happiness into a political context, to protect your freedom to pursue the rational values necessary for your life. That's what rights do. That's what rights are for. What about, so how should they rule? Well, they can't rule. There is no right way to rule. The right way to rule would be to rule in favor of the shopkeeper to discriminate, but not on the basis of free speech, not on the basis of religious liberty, but on the basis of your right to your property, of association, of property rights. That's the basis. But nobody's going to rule that. Nobody will do that. Even Thomas, who is sometimes comes the closest, I think, to a proper conception of rights of any of the justices, even Thomas won't do it. He'll vote probably for the shopkeeper, but on the basis of religious liberty, because there's now a push. There has been, if you remember, there was that Hobby Lobby case where they ruled for religious liberty. The religious liberty of I think it was to provide contraception and not to provide contraception coverage because they didn't believe in contraception. I mean, put aside the idea of not believing in contraception, but they got to exclude that because the owners of the business didn't believe in it, so they got an exclusion from Obamacare, which I think is a huge travesty of a ruling, because what makes your religion special that you get an exclusion, and my atheism, I can't get an exclusion. My philosophy doesn't provide me with an exclusion. It is an evil, evil case. And I think if they rule for the shopkeeper here on the basis of religious liberty, it's the same evil thing, but also on the basis of free speech. Because baking a cake is not free speech. And as we start to muddle and confuse speech with action, then we will lose speech. We will lose speech. Baking a cake, photographing, flower decoration are not speech. They've been defined by the courts as speech in order to get around, in order to get rulings that the court wanted to, but couldn't find a basis in the Constitution to get them, so they expanded the notion of speech to include action. I think there was a case in which stripping, you know, was defined as speech in order to allow for the right of the stripper to strip. Stripper has a right to strip, not because it's speech, but because she has a right to, you know, to pursue her values, to act, to engage in activity, as long as it's not violating other people's rights, as long as it's not, in violation of other people's rights, then she has a right to do it. It's a right to her own body, a right to her own action, a right to her own life. That's the basis, not free speech. So there's no free speech issue. And once we start muddling free speech, I fear we lose speech altogether. So I think the case is fascinating. There's a lot to say about the distinction between action and speech. I've talked about it a little bit in the past. Ayn Rand talks about it very briefly once, but there's a lot more to say. I'm going to have somebody like Steve Simpson on the show to talk about it, or Tara Smith to talk about it, because I think it's an important issue that as the court gets wrong, we're going to suffer not on the action side, but on the speech side. Okay. If there are any questions, comments, if anybody wants to call on that, you can call right now, 347-324-3075, 347-324-3075. Press 1 to let me know you want to ask a question. Right? Press 1 to let me know you want to ask a question. So just to sum up, you have a right It's your own property. You have a right to associate with whoever you want. You have a right to discriminate. Therefore, you have a right to be irrational, and I have a right to boycott you when you are, and a right not to associate with you when I think you're being irrational, which is, I think, the way to deal with irrational bakers. All right, we got a caller. Hi, you're on Brook Show. Who's this?
Is this me?
Yes, it's you. I think it's you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I'm such a huge fan of yours. I called a while back because I'm a Christian, but consider myself close to an objectivist.
Okay.
And did the most to shake me from my Christianity, but I just
I haven't succeeded yet. All right, we'll work on it.
Well, the thing is, the world you describe, and once it becomes so self-evident, I just can't imagine a world where hard work is and working for yourself helps everyone around you, not being, you know, created by a beautiful, amazing God. And I'm sorry, but that to me. So my question was, it really was, I know it's the Ben Shapiro question. It was,
I'll just ask this question and then you can ask a question, but so all the death, destruction, mutilation, disease, pestilence, genocides, holocausts, that's also done by a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful God. You don't have to answer that, but if you're going to,
Yes. Well, I was,
I love it. Like when football,
you're a big fan of Aristotle, right?
Like when,
because
football,
I am as well.
Pass and they score the touchdown, they always thank God for that. But when they drop the pass and they don't score the touchdown, they don't blame God for it. It's like, yeah, come on. If you're going to have a perspective on God, then be balanced about it. Anyway, I don't really want to get into debate about that, but go ahead.
Oh, I was just wondering about
the question you said.
Yes, it's about Aristotle, who you are a big fan of, and so am I.
Yeah.
His question, his philosophy of the unmoved mover. I just want to know your opinion on that, if I could.
Aristotle's wrong. That is, I don't see, but I can understand why he would do that. I don't think he thought enough about it. I mean, who created the unmoved mover, and why does one need it in order to explain the existence of the universe? I mean, if you're going to have a God, then I like Aristotle's view of God. That is, he started this whole process and went away, in a sense, and everything that we do, we're responsible for, good or bad. And, you know, God's not evolved anymore, and he certainly is not evolved in the day-to-day activities of mankind. Why would he want to be if he was such a that kind of a being? But, again, there's no evidence of that, of a unmoved mover. There's nothing to suggest that something like that exists. There's no need for it in order to explain the existence of the universe. So it logically just doesn't make any sense. It's just, yeah, okay. It solves certain conceptual issues for Aristotle. But there are other solutions to the same issues that you don't need a God for. You don't need to imagine a God for it.
I mean, I've tried to run through a million of them because
existence
exists. I can't come to a conclusion.
It's always existed. It's always existed. It's just here, and that's it. What more is there? What more is needed?
Before you move on to the next caller, I just want to thank you for opening my eyes on free trade. Yeah. I was a little bit blinded on that, and you've completely shifted my position on that.
Good. Good. Well,
so
I appreciate it.
Thank
you. Thinking
about
it. And you know who you should look up? Ankar Gate's videos on YouTube. Ankar does a good job talking about God and religion and morality and religion. And I think engaging with his ideas would be good in trying to understand this issue.
Okay. Thank you. I like being challenged on these things.
Good.
It's always good.
Well, I mean, Yeah, excellent. Well, and that's what I'm after, right? I'm after people who think. I'm after people who are open to thinking. The idea that all of you are going to agree with everything with me is absurd and ludicrous. I mean, that would be nuts. And particularly if you're just starting out, if you've just discovered my ideas or Ayn Rand's ideas, the idea that you were all suddenly, oh yeah, everything Yaron says is 100%, that would be crazy. What I'm looking for is people who have open minds, who are willing to think, and are willing to engage with ideas and be willing to be challenged about their ideas. And look, as I see it, you don't need God for anything, right? The world has always existed. Human beings evolved just like other animals. We have a particular nature. That particular nature, in a sense, determines what kind of an animal we are. And morality is about understanding what kind of an animal we are and therefore how we can live and how we can live the best life that we can live, given our nature as a specific type of animal. That's it. And, so you don't need God for morality. All you need is an understanding of the nature of man as a biological entity, as a living entity to know morality. And you don't need God to explain the universe, because the universe is just here. It's always existed. It's always been here. There's no mystery about it. It just is. And that's kind of it. But yeah, one of these days I can just do a show where I have all my religious followers call in with different questions about religion. But for now, we'll go to the next caller. Hi, you're in the Yaron Brook Show. Who's this?
Hello, Yaron. This is Abtin from Washington State.
Hey, Abtin. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great.
One day after another. God.
Yeah, and these evening shows are a lot easier to call into.
Good.
So I had a question. If I recall correctly, in Tara Smith's book on an objective approach to judicial review, she makes the point that the court shouldn't use cases. So even if they had the right philosophy, they shouldn't use cases to effect massive change quickly. That they should take a gradual approach. Based on the merits of the case, based on the context of it, and using principle, and then gradually work through a number of cases to get to the point where we live, in a more objective legal system. What do you think about that, and what would that kind of decision look like in this case?
I mean, I don't know what I think of it, and I'm terrified of. A contradicting Tara, because she knows about this much more than I do, and she really has thought about these issues, and I have not. So I would refer to her on this, but I would say that generally, that's how it's going to happen. You're not going to get unless we go through a complete massive collapse of civilization, new civilization arises. Change is going to be incremental. You're not going to do away with Social Security all at once. And the Supreme Court will not rule that Social Security is a violation of individual rights. So I agree with Tara. I'm not sure what it looks like exactly, but I agree with it. Because the Supreme Court couldn't rule, for example, if Social Security is a massive violation of individual rights, and therefore we have to completely abandon it tomorrow. I mean, so... I think what you would rule in a case like this is you would allow him to discriminate. You would say on the basis of his property rights or whatever right a legal philosopher would find it most appropriate to base it on. And you would explicitly say this opens up the possibility that the civil rights law is unconstitutional. But we will wait for future cases to cover that, right? And you would take it case by case. I think that's how you would do it, right? You would have to state that. So if Social Security came to you and you would say, yeah, Social Security is a violation of XYZ. It's wrong. However, we recognize the fact that it's been an institution for 100 years and that eliminating it tomorrow is not possible. We encourage the legislature to come up with a solution to phasing Social Security out And if they don't within the next, I don't know, year, come up with a solution, we will reconsider this case or come up with something else, some other solution in order to resolve this issue. I think those are the kind of things that you would have to do.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
We'd have to get Tara, and I'm going to have Tara on the show. I've talked to her about it, to talk about some of these issues, and that would be a great question to ask her, and this could be a great example to use when asking that question.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Albertine. Thanks for calling. All right. So if you're still calling in, remember you have to press 1 for me to know you want to ask a question. Otherwise, I don't know. I think you're just calling in to listen to the show. I'm not going to go for much longer, as much as I try to keep these shows. I want to mention two cases, another case, or two stories, if you will. I'll do this briefly because these are easy, but I think they might have slipped under the wire, so you might not be aware of them, even though I think they're really important. Okay, so there's a case that's come before a court about Starbucks. Starbucks bought Teavana, the tea store, that you see in malls all over the place. And it's decided now that Teavana, that it cannot make Teavana profitable, and it's basically shutting them all down. It's shutting every Teavana store in the country down. And they were sued by Simon Property Group, which is a big mall owner, basically to prevent them from closing the stores. And now, I might not know everything that's going on here, and this is where I don't trust the reporting 100%. Because there has to be some kind of contractual issue, right? You can't just walk away from a lease. So my assumption is that Starbucks is going to pay whatever penalties associated with ending the lease. Some of these leases still have like 10 years left, and they're going to have to pay a big penalty to the mall owner in order to do away with this. But there might be other contractual provisions which say you cannot walk away from the lease unless you can show XYZ. I don't know. But none of the stories suggest that. But what the stories are suggesting is that the mall owner sued them to prevent them from closing these stores, and that a judge in Marion County Superior Court, I don't know where Marion County is, has ruled that Starbucks cannot, or at least has granted a preliminary injunction preventing Starbucks from closing. So this is like an injunction until you hear further argument or until it goes to court. Preventing Starbucks from shutting down Teavana stores on the basis of, according to the stories, that Starbucks can absorb the losses because it's such a profitable company and the mall owner cannot. Now, if that's true, whoa, that is a massive disaster and a complete rejection of the rule of law. Complete rejection of the rule of law. The idea that a court should decide about a contractual issue based on which party can absorb the losses more, assuming the contract doesn't have anything like that in it, just has, if you want to shut down the store, you have to pay me X amount of dollars as a penalty, would basically throw out contract law and put in a utilitarian principle into any decision of the court, any court decision, no rights basis, no contract basis, all deciding on who can absorb the costs. I mean, can the shareholders of Sears absorb the cost of shutting, of keeping Sears open more than the mall owner? And you can think of this multiple, you know, can I absorb the cost of being fired from my job more than the employer who's going to fire me? I mean, this is insanity. Now, I don't think this will be upheld if it ever gets, is appealed, which I'm sure Starbucks will appeal it. But as described in the news media, this is a horrible, massive precedent that has to be rejected and is just, you know, another step away from the rule of law in this country and the respect for contracts and, you know, disaster. Just absolutely disaster. All right, I said these are going to be short. I'm going to end with something that I think is positive coming out of Trump And I never say anything positive about Trump because, as most of you know, I hate his guts. And I think he's a terrible president, and I think he's a terrible precedent as a president. And I think the fact that he was elected is a travesty. Now, granted, I think the fact that Clinton would have been elected would be a travesty as well. I don't want to go into all of that. But supposedly Trump tomorrow is going to declare Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and move the embassy to Jerusalem. I think that's terrific. Every Republican president in memory has said that they were going to do that and then reneged on it. If Trump, who said he was going to do it over and over and over again, kept delaying it, is actually going to do it, that would be good, partially because it would be a promise he made that he's actually fulfilling. Randomly, I think, because other promises he made, he's not going to fulfill, but this one he is. It's the right thing to do. I mean, Jerusalem, it's none of America's business where Israel decides its capital is. Its capital is Jerusalem. And the U.S. should not be intimidated by the Palestinians or by, you know, a bunch of Arab states that don't believe Israel should exist, period, in defining where it should have its embassy. So full disclosure, I'm Israeli. Not only that, I was born in Jerusalem. It's interesting because Jerusalem is the only city in the world where if you have an American passport, it says that you were born in Jerusalem. It doesn't give the name of the country. It only gives the name of the city because the United States does not recognize Jerusalem as a part of Israel. And therefore, it has a special designation. So my passport says Jerusalem. My wife was born in a different city in Israel. It says Israel. So, the Palestinians have no right to Jerusalem. The Palestinians, since they don't recognize the individual rights in any respect of their own people, since they don't recognize the individual rights of Israelis to have to live in peace, since they don't recognize individual rights, period, in any respect, what they think should not be a consideration in terms of what is actually the capital of the state of Israel. It's where the Israeli parliament meets. And it's about time that the United States recognized it, moved its embassy there. And let's hope that he actually does it. He's going to say it tomorrow. Let's hope he actually does it. All right. If you're interested in the discussion about rights that we had earlier, I refer you to two sources. One is Ayn Rand's essay, Man's Rights, which is both in The Virtue of Selfishness and in Capitalism, Not an Ideal, and is also available for free on the Ayn Rand Institute campus website. So just do Man's Rights, Ayn Rand on Google, and it'll send you to Ayn Rand campus where you can read the essay for free. I would also refer you to Tara Smith's book on judicial review, which has a good discussion of these kind of issues and these kind of topics and how to approach them. And I encourage you to go and buy that book and read that book or listen. You can also find her lectures on the topic on YouTube and I think the Ayn Rand Institute website, Ayn Rand Institute YouTube channel. So go watch those if you're interested in person. All right. This was the first show. Hope you liked it. Of Yaron's News Briefings, volume or episode one. Hopefully, we'll see how I feel, but hopefully we'll do episode two tomorrow. And we're going to make this a daily thing, potentially. And, hopefully there's, you will see value in it, and I will determine whether I keep doing it based on how many downloads I get on Blog Talk Radio, on iTunes, on all the podcasting apps, and then how many views this has on YouTube. That's really the two criteria: YouTube views over time and downloads from podcasting apps. That's the two criteria that I have for whether something is succeeding or not. All right, thanks everybody. Talk to you really, really, really soon. You'll be listening to the Yaron Brooks Show. Keep listening. Bye.